now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome back to The Ruck. Noisy times in the world of rugby, and that's regardless of anything happening on the pitch. Without any gobbing this week or stamping or indeed any existential conversations with the philosopher king, Steve Diamond. Now, this week the clubs are muscling up, not to conquer the Heineken Cup, of course, God no, at least not the English clubs. That's not very fair on Saracens, actually, is it? I probably should rewrite that bit. No, the noise right now is all about, are they going to break away from the RFU? Are they going to settle this most interesting ever Premiership season where over half the teams are crapping themselves about the threat of relegation by just saying, don't worry, hey, we'll just scrap relegation altogether? I'm Owen Slott, and with the kind of forward planning for which this podcast has never been previously associated, we've actually got on our panel the finest administrative mind known to the promotion relegation debate. So well done, Mark Evans. Thanks for being here. Former boss at Saracens and Harlequins, though not at the same time. Great to see you. We've also got two of the Ruck's stalwart front rowers, though I'm actually thinking we've got all, it's all front row, isn't it? Apart from myself, clearly. Alex Lowe of The Times and Alan Dimmock of Rugby World. Great to see you, boys. All good?
Hello.
Yes, thank you. All good.
So just in case anyone's slightly baffled by my very wordy intro. Yesterday morning, the Mail on Sunday broke a story about the clubs and politics and how they had threatened in a PRL meeting to break away from the RFU if they didn't get their way over promotion relegation. That was followed by a cracking exclusive in the Times today, yes, by me, about the clubs still wanting relegation scrapped. Well, we sort of knew that, but they still want it scrapped now. So that no one is relegated at the end of this season. The grand plan is London Irish come up and no one goes down. The drawbridge then comes up and the Premiership is ring-fenced for 4 or 5 years.
It's anyway. Fitting that you almost said Grand Prix there.
Would it be Grand Prix or would it...
Would it be? With CVC coming in, that's the noises that... It's making everything glamorous, isn't it?
I mean,
what was it? Tarting up. That was the phrase that was used in the Mail on Sunday. The boys need tarting up. It's supposed to start now, then, isn't it?
Does the Premiership need tarting up? Let's start there.
I don't think so this season. I think it's been a compelling competition on the field. I think there's a huge amount that could be done off it. And one of the things that I thought was interesting from the conversation with Mark McCafferty when the CVC deal was done was he was pushing the idea that the in-stadium experience and the facilities need to improve. That's a line, I mean, Mark will know a lot more, but that's a line you hear a lot in the NFL. The TV coverage is now so good, and the insight you get from the cameras and from the pundits is so informative that it's drawing people to watch games more and more on their sofas, and less in the stadium. And so in the NFL, they have to work incredibly hard to make the in-stadium experience as good as it can be.
It's interesting that the rhetoric this has changed so quickly, because it's not so long ago we were hearing people talking about how rugby needed to compete with the Championship in English football, in the English Football League. It needed to compete with Championship. Now it's competing with the NFL, which but the rhetoric has changed in that it can be, you know, that's what we're aiming for.
That NFL... That applies to every sport. That applies to cricket as much to cricket as to Championship football.
But those are the words that were used by Bernie Eccleston in the Mail on Sunday piece. And that suddenly it's an elevation of expectations.
That to me, I don't know what Mark thinks. That to me, you tart up the Premiership and suddenly you can become bigger than the NFL, was a ludicrous thing to say.
It's I thought it was really generous of Bernie Eccleston to share his thoughts with us on where rugby should go. But I mean, does anyone actually think he's been to a rugby game or knows the playing field that he's talking about? Mark, come on, this is really your territory.
Breakaway league, can't see it, actually. And I think it's interesting to see that the leak minutes were from April. That's quite a long time ago. A good story. I understand it from a journalistic point of view. But from a surely, is this some kind of plot? I think that word was used. I very much doubt it.
Let's just go with that. I agree with you. I thought it was a good story, but in terms of something that's likely to happen,
no.
Does anyone here think that is actually going to happen?
No, I don't think it happens.
In what time frame?
Well, okay, say in the next 3 years that the clubs will break away from the RFU and be like the Football Premier League.
Well, I think the analogies there are better analogies than that, because I think it's got history. This as something that happens. It happened in the Super League War in the late 90s in Australia, and they ran two separate competitions for a year.
Oh, yeah.
an establishment competition and a Murdoch competition, and new teams like the Hunter Mariners emerged, and Melbourne Storm came out of that. God bless them. You know, they were the news team in Melbourne, and owned them for another decade after that. And don't forget, in the 1960s, the AFC and the NFL went head to head for 4 years between 62 and 66.
Do you think any of us were going to forget
and
that?
And lost a shed load of money in the process, until they came to the negotiation table in 1966 and created the NFL, integrated NFL, which started 4 years later. There is history of breakaways from established competitions.
What sort of happened with sort of breakaways and promotion relegation in the early 18th century? Was there much for then as well?
Well, I could go into that, but I'm not sure that's really what our audience are after. We shouldn't dismiss this as complete pie in the sky over a longer time frame. But you have to think, you've got to put in, who's going to ref it? And if you're talking in the next year or so, who's going to referee it, right? Who's going to do the anti-doping? Who's going to do the player release agreement? Or are the players going to have to choose between playing international rugby and playing breakaway
that's
league?
That's the sticking point, isn't it?
And what about the legal situation where you've signed legally binding agreements over a much longer time period? So I think this is probably discussions you have around a governing body stroke league board table, which generally come under the heading of strategic direction. You know, where are we going with this? I'm sure that happens. I'd be very surprised if it doesn't. It should. But in terms of this could break it away next year, I don't think there's a chance of that, no.
When Europe came up for negotiation and the Premiership resigned from Europe, and because they wanted a restructured competition, they wanted a greater share of the revenue, their negotiating tactics on that occasion were to very publicly float the nuclear option. We're leaving with the French, and we'll set up our own competition. And they talked about it for years as the negotiations plodded along, but it was always there as a nuclear option. And this strikes me as a very similar tactic. I think they've allowed the option of a breakaway to be floated. I completely accept that from back in April, I don't see it happening, but they have gone public with the nuclear option to press through what they want from the RFU, which with Europe, it was a restructured competition and a greater share of the revenue. With the RFU, it's ring fencing, and I just feel that it's their negotiating tactic, which they have history in taking that approach.
And so, okay, so let's bin the breakaway. We've done that, but so that takes us on to breakaway was maybe
takes on your story.
Yeah, get on to the real stuff.
Yeah, which the stuffy story underpins that theory that you see that all the talk of a breakaway on Sunday morning, and then on Monday morning, the clubs are being reported that they still want to bring in ring fencing this summer. The two things, it's not very hard to join the dots between the two.
Mark, can you see ring fencing being allowed to get through so quickly?
I find myself in a difficult position here intellectually. I've been proposing a closed league. I hate that word, ring fencing, because a closed league, you've heard me say this before on this very show, a closed league is the way you grow the league, actually, in the long term. But we're not going to go down that. Let's not go down there again. although I am very much in favour of a closed league among a range of other changes and not on its own, to do it for next season when we've got at least seven teams possibly being the relegated team, and the undoubted short-term vicarious excitement that that will generate, I think that's going to be very difficult. And also, you then say, and then the other bit, which is much more dramatic, of the two elements, the no relegation for one season extended to 13 is one, and then to hold it for another 5 years and have no change whatsoever, that's an even bigger change. And therefore, I think unlikely to be able to be driven through without ending up back in the courts, my lord, a la London Welsh in 20, whenever it was, 12. And we keep coming back to this point that without a legal framework of a collective bargaining agreement, it's hard to see how that's not a cartel. And that's not a very comfortable position to be in.
Oh, I don't know what you think, Slotty, but the idea of pulling up the drawbridge for 4 or 5 years and then opening up again is, for me, I just don't see that as a realistic possibility. And both of us have spoken to Ben Ward at Ealing Trailfinders, and he the figures he would throw at you would be that in those 5 years, Ealing would get about £3 million in funding. The Premiership clubs would get about £30 million. So that any hope of closing that gap, it becomes impossible. If there's no chance of getting promoted and becoming a shareholder in the league, which is Ealing's big issue, if you're asking a club to wait for 5 years to make themselves ready for the Premiership, when actually during those 5 years they get £3 million versus £30 million, I think realistically the Premiership know that if they put up the drawbridge now, it's almost impossible for anyone to come.
It's impossible now. No, without a Steve Lansdowne type figure, it is impossible now.
Yeah.
You will come up and you will
just
go straight back down.
Just for new listeners, Steve Lansdowne is a Bristol owner and he's wealthier than us.
About 4 billion. yeah. He's one of the top 50 wealthiest guys in the country.
Yeah, and Ealing have a backer. I don't think there aren't many who are as rich as Steve Lansdowne, but Ealing have a wealthy backer who is prepared and wants to build that club into Premiership. You're right, that is the only way that it can happen.
Do you not think, so my view on this, and it's probably not as, you probably pick holes in this, Mark, but my view is that if you pull up the drawbridge, and there's a lot of arguments for doing that, then the RFU and PRL owe a responsibility to the clubs in the Championship to help them develop so that when it comes up again, one of them or two of them are in a position to come up into the Premiership and be an equal partner there. Because the point is, at the moment, none of them are anywhere near equal. And no matter how much Ealing Trailfinders say, listen, we deserve a chance, they look nothing like a Premiership club. I mean, they haven't got a ground that's good enough. They've got a crowd that averages about 650 people. For the Premiership and all its ambitions, Ealing are an embarrassment, or they would be an embarrassment. It's not nice to say that, but that is a fact. So if they have that ambition and the money, then surely that interim period could be well spent with a decent plan to make them Premiership ready.
We've got to get away from this idea that somehow that clubs in parts of the country or with backing who could add value to the Premiership have to do it through replacing somebody else.
Okay? I agree.
You've just got to get away from this football structure, because it doesn't work. It leads to clubs being destroyed, a la London Welsh and Richmond. We've had two in a relatively small period of time. But at the same time, if you are serious about growing the scale, the size of the league, and I'd just point out with the CVC thing, I can't find any league that's gone international without a really strong domestic market. I can't find one anywhere, okay? And my argument is, people are going about CVC in America and China and all that. Actually, that is not the opportunity to start with, in my opinion. I think that the opportunity here is to grow the size and the reach of the Premiership in England / Britain.
Well, interestingly, I was speaking to some people from the marketing side of things over the weekend about what the global sponsorship situation is like with rugby at the moment. And there's a reason why, I mean, the big one that looming ahead of us is the Six Nations and why sponsorship of that has stalled so much. And one of the things I kept hearing was that sponsors want a certain amount of usable, quantifiable data back from the competitions that they sponsor. It's not like sponsorship 20 years ago or even 10 years ago or even 7 years ago where you could say, right, the Six Nations gets X million viewers on free to air TV. That's good enough for us. We're getting our brand name. Because brand building can happen anywhere now. Social media, advertising campaigns. They can own, to own this entire competition, they need to be able to see payback. What are they going to get for that with the Premiership or a new Premiership that goes abroad? There's other elements of this as well. I was speaking to people in America recently, and I spoke to an owner of one team about what was happening, because if you're going to go into America, you're probably butting heads with the MLR, the new American competition that they've got there. They said that they would welcome the Premiership to come. This owner said that they would welcome the Premiership to come back because the last couple of times they've done it has been atrocious. It's made no impact whatsoever.
This owner said all previous evidence of the Premiership going to America have been deeply unimpressive.
Right. It's the same with China, okay? There's noises about going to China, and you speak to those in Asia. They're already competing with a competition that's going to be starting up there. Okay, we've all heard of Andrew Twiggy Forrest.
Yeah, it's a really interesting concept, that. Right? Really high risk, but very interesting.
High risk. Global Rapid Rugby is the name of this competition that they're trying to set up in markets where, to say it's a standing start would be complimentary. You know, so they're facing real inertia there. Are the Premiership really going to bundle in there? And bearing in mind that China, World Rugby, had a deal with Alibaba in China about a certain amount of money to try and spread the game.
Alibaba.
Alibaba is a global powerhouse. I suppose you could call them a tech giant, although
they're one of the big two tech.
Yeah, yeah. Chinese okay, tech. But they have fingers on all sorts.
I just wanted to clarify that for people listening.
So the World Rugby did a deal with them to spread the game in China. Lo and behold, a couple of years later, without any noises being made whatsoever, they said, oh, this thing has been absolutely crushed. Yeah, we're sorry. Nothing's really going to happen with this. China have had an upheaval in their union. So these are the markets that CBC reckon that Premiership Rugby can bundle into.
Well, I'm not sure CBC have said that directly. No. To be fair,
they haven't.
Unless I've missed it, I haven't seen anything from CVC that says what their plan is, and I think it's very interesting because they will have one. These are not stupid people.
Yeah,
you know, these are. It's a very small deal for CVC by private equity standards, but a very high profile one. They will have thought this through. I don't know what their plan is. I have no idea.
But the interesting thing about this, Mark, I've spoken to lots of people, and you're sort of saying it yourself. They don't do this unless they believe they can get really big returns. And well, we're sitting around talking about Premiership Rugby and how great it is, or how the fact that people think it's not as great as people are saying, etc. I have not had anyone persuade me where all that extra return is going to come from. Well, where is CBC going to make this massive money?
I still don't get. No, and I think a lot of people would say that, but all I would argue is that, and having not been inside the negotiations at all or made any effort to find out what it is about, there will be a plan because although it's a relative, as I said, it's a relatively small investment, and they have got a backstop in terms of they do get 27% of the centrally generated revenue, so they're getting a return, albeit not a private equity level return on their investment. But you come back to the point, which is I think phase one will largely be about growing the sport in its domestic market. And I would be being incredibly inconsistent if I didn't argue, and I have done for, you know, best part of two decades, it's not growing as quickly as it ought or that it could.
Completely
and
agree.
One of the reasons it isn't is we keep getting fixated by this sterile argument about promotion, relegation. The debate should not be about that. It should be about, do you have a closed league with managed growth? In other words, do you close it and actually say, and in 5 years' time or 10 years' time, when our revenues have grown? Because everyone forget, why is this such a row? It's such a row because at the moment, the money, most of the money is split 12 stroke 13 ways, right? Why are people so worried about relegation? Not because they won't survive, because clubs that have been in the Premiership for a while do survive if their owners stick with them, which most do. It's a blip. It's a very unpleasant blip. Well, it's an irritating blip, but it's a blip. The bigger thing is, well, we should go to 14. Well, if you go to that, you then, A, number of fixtures, B, you're splitting the same amount of money 14 ways. You only go to 14 once you've grown the revenues so that nobody, if you like, is worse off, and yeah, you've got enough surplus to grow another two venues, who then get your point, Alex, who then get a full allocation from Get One, and they get a longer moratorium for staying in. Other sports around the world, you talk to them and you say, if you want to increase, bring new teams into the league, they've got to be good. They've got to be in the chance of winning it in the first 5 years, because they've got to build up a fan base. You know, you do not want a team coming in that's going to, what's the debate? Are they going to 11th or 12th? Right? That is not, that's a really good way of wasting millions and millions of pounds. And that's what we've got at the moment. You know, everyone says, oh, you should get relegated if you don't run your club well. Let's say Newcastle go down this year. They're this very same club with the very same people everyone was lauding 12 months ago.
Well, what a
fantastically well-run club in a rugby outpost. They've come fourth, Heineken Cup, fantastic. Now, and this is where I am so anti-relegation, you're now saying that model club is meant to go back into the Championship from a year, of which they will immediately come back out again, and have wasted £3 or 4 million in the process that you could have put into growing the sport. Yeah. That's my problem with it, in sort of a little anecdote.
It just comes back once again to who the next chief executive of the RFU should be, and is he sitting amongst
us?
Mark goes all coy when we're saying this, but I was actually talking about Alan Dimmock.
Yes, good. He knows a lot more than me.
Mark, you talk so much sense on that. The clubs and the RFU would, and the Championship would do very, very well to listen. Of course, they'll listen to us anyway. Whatever the Premiership looks like next season, what sort of a quality of a package and a product do you think it is that CVC, etc., will be selling to China or Russia or wherever they want to go? So already what I'm saying is, we have this phenomenally unpredictable, brilliantly unpredictable Premiership this season where you can't tell what's going to happen. How good actually do you think the rugby is at the moment?
If you're selling a product, if you're selling a sporting product, you want drama and unpredictability, because that's what makes sport great. And in that sense, that's
as it's ever been.
Yeah, I mean, we know who the top two are going to be, but we don't know who's going to finish from third down to 12th. And so if you're investing in a sport for the qualities of everyone wants in their sport, then the Premiership at the moment is delivering on that, because you want every team to be able to beat every other team, which is happening. You want quality, and I think we're seeing quality. And Mark was talking before we came on air about Leicester and the way they played and Matt Turner's performance. You know, there are high quality performances as well. And so in that sense, I think CVC are probably really enjoying what they're watching this season.
So do you think I'm just being a bit of a sourpuss by suggesting that I don't think the quality has been that outstanding? I mean, Exeter and Saracens, who are more advanced than the other clubs, they haven't been really hitting the straps or playing really good rugby. I mean, Al, what do you think of the rugby generally that you've seen?
Well, firstly, to go to Alex's point, the fact that there's 8 points between the team in 10th and the team in 4th, I think, you know, we all want to watch a league where there's actually everything to play for.
Yeah.
That's... You know, you want things to go down to the wire.
Meaningful games.
Meaningful games, but also how often... when have you ever watched a sports movie where it's a runaway at the end? You know, we all want something that goes to the wire. And, you know, I think we're all predicting that the relegation battle will at least go to the wire. Meaningful games, there's plenty of bed. Now, we're going to go on and talk about Europe. Okay, we talk about quality of this, and I suppose if you want it to be close, sometimes you're going to have to go screw your defence. If you want entertainment, you're going to have to say, screw the defence. And we're going to have teams running in tries that should never be. Okay, that's just a byproduct of whether you want the entertainment or not. Because if it's all tight, and it comes down to watching a league, you go, do I really want to watch that? Do I really want to fork over a subscription to pay to watch a rugby game for it to be as tight as that? And that's the big thing we've got at the moment that we're talking about, particularly when you look at the Premiership and where they're looking ahead to what the TV deals are going to be. because that negotiation is coming up on the rails very quickly.
Yeah,
we're going to talk about Europe and whether they can translate that. Okay, some teams are underperforming in Europe.
There's two different things here. They're not the same. One is uncertainty of outcome. That's the way. And it's absolutely critical. If you're looking to drive value, and I keep coming back, driving value of any competition is about uncertainty of outcome. Sport thrives on drama and uncertainty and surprises and all the rest of it. Okay? If you know who's going to win before the competition starts, go and watch Scottish football, right? And that's when it's not growing, and that's why, one of the reasons it's not growing, okay? Because the league is so lopsided. Spanish football to a degree as well, you know. We've got that. It takes a long time to build. We haven't quite got it to the degree that some other sports have got it, but we're moving in the right direction. The second point is style. That's different. That's the product.
Yeah.
Okay, those are two different things. They both have a role in driving value, but the game, what we're looking at, is one thing, and how close the teams are to each other is another thing, and you want, ideally, both. Or actually, which you don't have anymore, which is a damn shame, you have clubs that are really close playing different ways. We don't have that much these days, the way the games change and the laws and all the rest of it. Most teams play pretty much the same way, and some play it better than others.
I think what Mark's saying there is that we want to see Duncan Weir having a kick from the touchline to win it every weekend.
Yes, we do. And at the beginning of every season, what you really go for is every fan of every club looks down the rosters and goes, you know what, we're injury free, and I like our coach in his second year, you know, we got a chance this year. Every single club's fans but if you do that, you've got to do a whole lot of different things, and some of which we've already touched on earlier today.
But so you're not bothered by the fact that, despite, you know, the brilliance of Duncan Weir kicking the last minute, etc., when you turn to Europe, you see that teams that are in the English Premiership are not of the top quality. Obviously, Saracens accepted. Doesn't bother you at all?
That's a very, very short-term view of a long-term build. Okay, some years English teams will do well, some years they will not. It's partly English arrogance. Why aren't our teams doing well every year? Which I find extraordinarily irritating.
That's fair enough.
No, it's not. It's just arrogant.
No, it's fair enough to criticise the arrogance. I agree with you.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. If you agree with me, of course you're right. The longer term growth of the Premiership, is in my view more important than getting three English teams into the quarterfinals of the Heineken Cup every year. I would, if we're looking to trade, I trade that every time. And actually, for the Heineken Cup, I think it's more important that Scottish teams get into the quarterfinals and that Welsh teams do, rather than what we used to have a few years back, which was all English and all French. I think that damaged another competition far more than it being difficult for English clubs to get into the later stages.
I've got some numbers here. In the first 2 years after the new Europe was launched, which demanded that the teams from the Pro 12/Pro 14 had to qualify on merit.
They had to try a bit harder.
Only one Celtic team in the first 2 years reached the quarterfinals, which was Leinster in 2014-15. But in the last 3 years, so at that point, so 14-15, there were four Premiership teams, one Celtic team, and then five Premiership, no Celtic teams. Since then, Premiership have qualified two, and then one, and then at the moment it looks like one, into the quarterfinals. And the Pro 14 have qualified three, and currently four. The French qualification has been pretty much level. And I just wonder whether, almost tying all the conversations together, but the Pro 12/14 is a ring-fenced league, a closed league, to use Mark's preferred expression. But there is, that by introducing the merit-based qualification within it, it does give the team something to play for.
You've got to. A closed league's got to have something in it other than just winning in it. Otherwise, there aren't enough narratives.
But it also gives them
another narrative.
But also allows them to, it's less of a scrap in a lot of ways, and they can obviously focus on the Heineken in ways that we've discussed ad nauseam on here. But it's just interesting that as the English teams have struggled, the Celtic teams who've...
And it's really interesting because you see this year Benetton look like they're going to make the Heineken. Yeah, I know they're a really tight conference. They might fall away. But that is not... That's a result of a number of things. One of which is what you've said is they're not getting in automatically. There's a lot of other things going on in Benetton at the moment that Conor O'Shea and others are driving that are starting. We're starting to see some effects. But that, for me, is a much more encouraging sign and something I would be pushing much harder than saying, "Well, God, you know, well, only one English team or two. Doesn't really matter." But you know, it's not actually the English team's core competition. The core competition that you're trying to drive value and interest in is the Premiership.
And if you look at Pro 14, the Irish clubs, their core competition has really very much become Europe.
And yet they target all their best players.
Yeah,
but you look at the crowds they get for their Pro 14. Again, English often don't pay enough attention. Leinster and Munster and Ulster get very, very good crowds for their Pro 14 fixtures as well. Look at Glasgow. You know, there's an unsung story. You know, whoever thought 20 years ago that any sport other than football would ever get a toehold in that city? You know, that and they turn out for the top 14 as well. We're close to Wales, and there we talked about this before. That's the country it doesn't seem to be quite working for. We've conflate that to the whole competition, and I just don't think the data backs it up.
Can I just ask, Mark, that you mentioned that the legal arguments and the issue of people would claim a closed Premiership is a cartel. Why is that allegation not thrown at the Pro 14, which is also a closed competition?
Because the there isn't another group of clubs / counties in those three unions that there isn't a Cornish Pirates or an Ealing Trailfinders. You know, Ireland's organised on and their all teams are in. Wales have reorganised and they're all in. Or you could still go to Pontypool and Bridgend and find that argument. But it's a pretty weak one. Yeah. That ship's probably sailed.
Yeah, and the Scots would like to reorganise and have three, but
don't do that. They're doing so well. Don't encourage them.
That went down well, didn't it? This is The Ruck, and we'll be back in a minute.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility, there's more to iPhone.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal, to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Ruck. On the European front, though, so as Alex said, generally one English club in the quarterfinals, which is always Saracens. Do we think that there might be another? Has anyone here give Exeter or Gloucester a chance?
Yes, Exeter, but not Gloucester. I think they've got to beat Cass this weekend with a bonus point.
And then they've got to beat Munster away.
And then they've got to beat... Gloucester might beat Munster at Kingsham. And that'll put both of them on 13, and there's a shootout at Thomond Park. Exeter could do that. I think they're probably a better team than Munster, but it's still elevated. Not many. I mean,
Munster on a bit of a roll at the moment.
They are. And so, look, I think it's. I don't think Gloucester have any chance. I think Exeter have a slim chance.
Yeah, I think that. I think that's the sort of one of the great storylines remaining in the qualification stages. The biggest game of the weekend is Leinster Toulouse, though, yes?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, Toulouse, I mean, what a resurgence that they've had in the top 14.
Terrific.
I mean, it's incredible. And I think I mentioned on this podcast before going for a birthday present to a Heineken Cup final that was Toulouse versus Stade. And it was one of the worst rugby spectacles I've ever seen in my life. It was just a boot fest.
Good weekend there.
Yeah, Toulouse. Well, I enjoyed myself. It was my 18th, so it was very good fun. But Toulouse, it's as much the way that they're playing as well as getting results. I mean, every weekend you see highlights pouring out of these length of field tries that they're scoring. Fantastic continuity, and it's amazing. We talked about how the Giant, we always talk about waking up a Giant. They'd fallen asleep for quite a long time, and if you've ever been over to Toulouse and spoken to the Toulousain, the fans over there, and the people that love that club, they were actually hamstrung for a lot of years speaking to people that love the club by the fact that they like to promote their own in Toulouse. Mm. They like to close ranks and look after their own and look after homegrown talent, which is very laudable, but when that homegrown talent goes through to becoming a coach and they might not be at it, there's not really much recourse for bringing in an outsider. It's taken them a few years, but they're playing exceptional rugby, and both of those teams deserve to go through, because how unfathomable would it be to have a Heineken Cup without Leinster going through? I think those two teams are
probably
the pick of the competition.
You kind of would like to see Leinster going through in second and having to
play away from the RDS.
They will both, yeah.
Uncertainty of outcome, see?
But they will both go through.
Doesn't sound so exciting when you just put it that way.
Sorry.
Uncertainty of outcome.
It's a bit of a marketing clip for us. I'm sorry. I'll try not to use it again.
They'll both go through, and effectively they're playing for a home semi-final, quarter-final, sorry. But
please just take them away from the RDS.
Yeah, well, Leinster could do with being tested away from home. But
yeah.
Someone contacted me on Twitter just to complain about everyone making so much of the Ireland-New Zealand game and said it was just a friendly, it wasn't part of anything. And my response to him was...
It looked like a friendly, didn't it?
Well, that was exactly my response. You know, sometimes, why can't these matches count just as their own entity and be their own games for the 80 minutes of you know, competition? He said, I wasn't competitive. I said, well, try asking any of those players.
Wasn't competitive.
Well, that's what my point here is. You know, what are they at?
Can you name this
in the subject
this
of
Twitter troll?
It's a village missing its idiots.
You know, in the context of their qualifications, they're both going through.
Yeah.
What's riding on it? Maybe a home quarter final, but
doesn't matter. It's Toulouse-Leinster.
Toulouse-Leinster, with the way those two teams are playing and the rugby they're producing. It has everything that you could want for 18 minutes sitting down to watch
anyone
a game of
with
European
Chesley
rugby.
And Colby in it. Sorry, I'm watching. He's just...
That's very romantic, but I agree with you 100%.
Such a crush on him. It's just... He's brilliant.
Calm down, Mark.
I know.
Okay, so we're just at the end of the latest phase of the Premiership. So a few questions. So, as we said, Exeter and Saris are slightly stretching away. Third, fourth is a bit of anyone's guess. So I'm going to ask anyone to guess. Al, who would your third and fourth be?
Well, third and fourth? Oh, God. Do we think Wasps have shown enough that they're coming back? I mean, Mark
with most
of
those teams, there's not much to go on whether they're coming back or not. I think Harlequins have just won two in a row.
I'll tell you what,
I would say Gloucester will be there because they seem overly Cipriani reliant, but he's coming back to fitness. So
I would say Quinn at the moment, out of all the other teams, I think there are some green shoots at Leicester, but Harlequins, as it stands, are the team who seem to be building up ahead of steam quicker than the rest. I think there are four rounds
of that.
There are three or four rounds of Premiership during the Six Nations.
Four.
And at the moment, that determines loads. And at the moment, I don't think Harlequins lose anyone to England based on recent selections. They don't lose Brown, and they don't lose Kerr. As it stands,
they might lose Don Brandt.
I think they're well
every week. Isn't he amazing?
I think they're in a strong position to keep it going. And Gloucester will be my other because
you have a good point. Gloucester will. How many will they lose? They won't lose much.
No, and then they get Cipriani back.
But we could go through. I mean, there's a reason why there's an accordion in the table here because you can't say that Sale Sharks are going to lose an awful lot of players during the Six Nations either.
No.
And I tell you what, they're thumbing their nose at everyone.
But they are going to lose two guys back to South Africa, aren't they?
What did you just say? There's an accordion in the table.
Squeezing.
I thought that's what you meant. I hadn't heard that before. Is that just me?
Visual imagery is part of good.
No, I like visual imagery. I don't know. I'm sure our listeners will love that. Alex, you know about the accordion?
I did.
Okay, well,
I'm going to use it
every week in my copy now.
But I'm going to ask the same question I just asked you again, and I'll ask it to you, Owen.
Who is playing the accordion?
The Wasps. Do you think Wasps have shown enough over that win at the weekend? Because people are saying, oh, the slump's over. We're back now.
No, but that, isn't that what's happened every week to every club? So,
yes.
Yeah.
So Leicester didn't win for a while. They won a game. They all feel like they, we just need to dig a heel in, and then we'll be able to build. But no one's really done that. Saints the week before beat Exeter. You go, oh, finally we're back. But then they were pretty average. Dai Young said something in his press conference after the Wasps game yesterday. He said, oh, I still think when we get our best 23 back, we're going to be really hard to beat.
You never will.
And well, that was exactly my thought. I said, if you get your best 23 back, one, you'll be outstanding. Two, you're dreaming, because that just doesn't happen anymore.
No.
And that's why Saracens and Exeter are still doing well, because they have greater depth than everyone else.
Saracens
are in crisis at the moment. Patrick,
who would have said this a couple of weeks? I think Leicester would be top five. For top four.
You're nailing your colours to the mast on that?
Sorry? Yeah, I am. I think they've had their... And it was a big trough. But if you look through that team, OK, if you really just look at the personnel, OK, they're a really strong outfit.
Yeah, but we've just said four games during the Six Nations, they're going to lose Youngs, Ford... Tuilagi and Johnny May.
That's a fair point.
That's the whole of their. Well, it's a lot of their back division.
I wouldn't rule out. Dan Cole might still somehow crawl back as well.
You never know.
Yes.
I mean, his best rugby has been since he got dropped by England.
Yeah.
But there's no doubt anybody from probably Saints up could go top four.
Yeah.
I don't see Bristol going top four. I don't see Worcester or Newcastle going top four. But I do think anybody else, you put a run together, it's gonna be great, because it's gonna go down. You know, the Premiership's always got three issues: who's gonna win it, who's gonna go top four, who's gonna go down, and actually, if it gets very dull, we start talking about the top six. But a really good Premiership season is when we don't talk about European qualification. We talk about who's winning it, who's going down, and who's gonna win the top, who's gonna be in the top four. That's a really good indication. If no one starts witching on about Heineken Cup qualification until the last 2 weeks, it's been a good year.
All right, well, we've been told. Our final item, our God or Goddess of the Week.
I mean, Mark mentioned them earlier, but I'm glad he did, because I wanted to give a shout-out to Benetton. I think it's exceptional what they've done. Okay, they've beaten the Kings a couple of times this season. They've beaten the Dragons, they've beaten the Blues. But that win against Glasgow at the weekend... exceptional stuff for them, and what a statement it is to win four games on the bounce. Benetton, Treviso, people all over Venice will be cheering for them.
Yeah.
The Veneto will be dancing in the streets.
Dancing in the streets of the Veneto, love it.
I wrote down Mike Brown, 308 club appearances.
Take mine.
You'll like to agree, lads.
Just remarkable individual achievement. And
shouldn't we be saying, oh, that's too much rugby? Shaking our heads.
I think. No, I said earlier that he doesn't look to be in Eddie Jones's immediate plans. I think partly because Eddie Jones needs to properly find out whether Elliot Daly can play fullback. But I remain to be convinced that he won't be at the World Cup.
Do we think that he's actually going for a new haircut as well? Is that
It's a Samson thing, isn't it?
So the voluntary challenge amongst our panel consider doing the same. Al, Mark,
you're joking, aren't you?
I still don't see an England World Cup squad without him in it. I just don't be sure everything he would bring to that squad, and the way he's playing in 308 appearances. So he's mine.
Mark, you can throw your weight behind that.
I'll put him at number two in. That was my number one. My number two is, it's a group, it's the referees. I did detect this weekend for the first time what looked suspicious, and I just hope it continues, otherwise there'll be devils of the week, a movement towards starting to really react much quicker to this nonsense we're starting to get in of people chops in a way trying to claim penalties. Luke Pearce did it to Tom Cruise at Wasps within the third minute and said, you do that again, you're gone. He was saying, holding on. It drives me absolutely nuts.
He did it to someone else yesterday.
And Owen Farrell got it.
Farrell should get it every 5 minutes.
Farrell got it on Saturday night, Friday night. And in a similar vein, Ian Tempest, that was brave. And that was really, really brave to keep yellow carding, because they were all yellow card.
So this is the referee in the 11, Bath ended up
11
game.
It was a red.
He reduced Bath to 11 men.
And he reduced them to 11. There are loads. Two things for that. One, good on him, and that was he did the right thing. And it's easy to do the right thing when there's no consequences. That was doing the right thing when there he was putting himself really exposing there. I thought that was terrific. And also the fact that nobody on the Bath management tried to game it, unlike Wales France a few years back. Remember when that went on. And there was gaming on both benches, Wales and France, that afternoon, which I thought was disgraceful. But fair play to Todd Blackadder and his team. They did not try and game that. We've always got a hamstring, we'll go to uncontested, etc, etc.
Well, you just mentioned my God of the Week, which is Todd Blackadder. We don't need to trawl too far back to remember a time when Bath lost a game and tried to legally challenge the result and asked for it to be replayed. On this occasion, I thought Blackadder was magnificent. I mean, the guy has the patience of a saint to be working at that club, because it's not an easy place to be. And as you say, he took that on the chin and didn't challenge it, didn't complain, didn't game it during the run of the play at all. Thanks, gents. God of the Week, I think with the new haircut, has to be Mike Brown. So he'll be delighted about that. Alex, Mark, thanks again for being on The Ruck. We're back next week as usual. Thank you for listening, and see you next week.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host Luke Jones for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.